It is Tuesday, November 26, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Later on this edition of Ozarks, the Arkansas Scholarship Lottery is 4 years old. There have been some bumps along the way, but the games of chance have provided hundreds of millions of dollars for scholarships. We'll talk to the lottery's second director, Bishop Woosley.
Plus, 40,000 students in elementary and middle schools across Northwest Arkansas create art in a single day, and the marvels involved with a staging of Carnival at the Alma Performing Arts Center. The show has steampunk costuming, puppets, and music.
But first, the Arkansas Economic Development Commission yesterday announced a new initiative to identify and market large acreage sites, dubbed mega sites, designed to attract major industrial development. Grant Tenniel, executive director of the AEDC, says two sites, one in Saline County, the other in West Memphis, have already received the designation. Details about the mega sites are being marketed on a new website called AdvanceArkansasSites.com.
This gives us the option to pursue some larger projects that in the past we weren't ready to pursue. A lot of this work came as the result of our looking for mega sites for potential projects. In one case, a project that has been announced in Big River Steel, and realizing that we didn't have enough, and we needed communities to step up to the task of providing us larger sites.
Construction on the Big River Steel Mill has been delayed after the competing Nucor Steel filed an objection to the new company's request for environmental permits.
The Springdale Fire Department is planning for the future. The City Council tonight will consider approving a strategic plan developed for the department. Mike Irwin is Springdale's fire chief.
This is some goals, objectives that we put together as a kind of a vision for the fire department for the next 5 years. It's kind of that forward thinking, looking at what we need to address in the near future.
The strategic plan touches on areas like workforce diversity, updating equipment, reducing response times, planning for future stations, and more. Chief Irwin says the plan was developed as a customer-driven strategic plan.
And we met with a group of citizens, basically, and kind of went through with them what they felt like our strengths were as an organization, what our weaknesses were, what opportunities were out there, and then what challenges we faced over the next 5 years. And then we did that same process with all of our internal personnel, plus we did the same process with all of our elected officials. So that's what comes into play with a true customer-driven strategic plan. So you kind of get all of those inputs and then come together with the plan.
Chief Irwin says the department last created a strategic plan sometime in the 1970s, but he says city officials felt a new strategic plan was necessary to outline the top issues the department will have to address in the next 5 years. The Springdale City Council meets tonight at 6 o'clock.
This holiday week, Arkansas State Police are sharply stepping up enforcement of the state's seatbelt law. It comes amid what's typically the busiest travel season of the year. Ann Whitehead is with the department's Highway Safety Office and says it's a coordinated effort.
The Arkansas State Police is going to partner with several other states, including Tennessee, Oklahoma, and Texas, in an additional enforcement effort along the I-40 corridor during the heavy traveled, busiest hours of the Thanksgiving holiday travel period. Each state plans to assign a trooper to every 20-mile segments of Interstate 40.
Whitehead says the effort is about saving lives.
Too many people are not getting the message. About half of the people who were killed in motor vehicle crashes did not wear their seatbelt at the time of the crash. So buckling up is a proven lifesaver, but it's often forgotten during the rush of holiday travel.
She says Thanksgiving is typically the busiest travel season of the year.
Benton County officials last night voted to maintain current funding levels for Ozark Regional Transit. The Public Transit Authority asked the Quorum Court for 20% of the revenue the county will receive from the state's new half-cent sales tax for transportation projects, or nearly $258,000. But Benton County Justices of the Peace voted instead to continue funding the Transit Authority at the level of $15,000. Last week, Washington County officials approved increasing its fund of ORT from $23,500 to nearly $123,000.
Arkansas Power Electronics International, a company headquartered at the Arkansas Research and Technology Park in Fayetteville, has received millions of dollars in new federal research contracts. The company, which specializes in high-performance electronics destined for volatile environments, announced yesterday it has received $4.2 million in new federal contracts. That total includes $2 million from the U.S. Department of Energy to develop low-cost electric traction inverters for hybrid and electric vehicles. It also includes a $1.5 million award from the Army Research Laboratory, which will go toward developing high-voltage power modules for controlling high-voltage storage capacitors in advanced Army applications.
Those who frequent Fayetteville's entertainment and downtown business districts will get a little holiday gift from the city. Downtown parking at all surface parking lots and on-street parking will be free this Thursday and Friday, and again on December 24th and 25th. According to the city, the free parking will not include the municipal or town center parking deck or for residential reserve parking spaces in the entertainment district.
Clear and cold tonight. Lows will be in the mid-teens in northwest Arkansas, lower 20s for the Arkansas River Valley. Sunshine tomorrow, highs from 31 to 37 across the region. Tomorrow night, clear with lows from 17 to 22. This is Ozarks at Large. Carroll County is one of the few counties in Arkansas without a shelter for victims of domestic violence. But one Eureka Springs church congregation is trying to remedy that situation and is raising funds to secure property to establish such a shelter. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas has more.
Rocky Whiteley is pastor and founder of Wildflowers Chapel, Thrift Store, and Food Pantry.
Wildflowers was founded by the Holy Spirit after Isaiah 58, to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, visit the sick in hospitals, and visit the prisoners in jail. And we do all those things.
Each and every Friday, Rocky, along with volunteers, feeds around 400 people with donated foods. And it's nearly 19 years they have missed just one Friday due to an ice storm. Wildflowers also does what it can to house the homeless by renting hotel rooms when funds allow. An effort to open an abused women's shelter in Carroll County is evidence of that charitable mission. Rocky recalls a failed effort in the 1990s to open such an organization.
Maggie Duran, a wonderful Catholic lady over in Berryville, was trying to get a Martha Mary House, safe house for abused women, started. And my wife had gone over and was helping her, trying to help her with that ministry. We started raising money. I got some friends of mine, and they were able to locate an old abandoned church over in Berryville, and we started the Martha Mary House. And then Maggie and her group, you know, took it over. It kind of fell on hard times, I guess, after a while. I don't know what happened, but it closed after a couple of years. And so it's always been in my wife's heart that we've got to get a shelter for abused women.
Robin Arnold is the domestic violence and sexual assault investigator for the prosecuting attorney's office in Berryville. She says that the effort most likely didn't last due to lack of funding, as it takes a lot of money to both start and sustain a domestic violence shelter.
You're talking about, you know, food, product, supply, if you're going to have any type of doctor or physician help, nursing help, a law enforcement officer to maintain control over that building. And over, you know, over anything that happens in that building, I believe cost. It's the cost. It's a rural county. We are a rural county here. We have law enforcement. However, I think a facility would have to maintain its own law enforcement person. So probably financial.
Just because there isn't an organization in Carroll County doesn't mean there isn't a need. Each quarter, Arnold sees between 40 and 70 cases of domestic violence. She says when someone is arrested on a domestic violence charge, they are incarcerated for 48 hours before going before a judge for a probable cause hearing. 48 hours that are very precious to the victim. It's a time when many decisions are and should be made, as far as where to go, what to do with children, a job, transportation, even a phone, Women's shelters not only provide protection from an abuser, but also provide help with all of those things. And they have the ability to connect a victim with resources.
We have nothing here like that. So that person, in the first 48 hours, they've got to decide whether to file a protective order, how to file a protective order, who can help them, if they're going to stay in the home, if they're going to leave the home, if they're going to get their get their things from the home. And now all the while, sometimes they're in a state of shock because they've been injured. Sometimes they have to go to the hospital, and that takes several hours to do. Child care, you know, is an issue. Getting to another domestic violence shelter, but once again, there's no way for them to get there. If they don't have a car, if they're injured, they have children, they have to take them out of school. So there's a big hub right there. They have no choices.
Though there are shelters in neighboring Benton and Boone counties and northward in Missouri, it is not an ideal situation. As Arnold mentioned, children have to go to school, and if a victim lacks transportation, getting a child to school would be impossible. Even getting to the shelter would be difficult. The Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter in Rogers says it has seen just 10 women from Carroll County this year, out of over 500 people it's helped. But they attribute that to the smaller population of the county rather than a need, and they do take people in from anywhere. Arnold says she has had only one instance where she was unable to find a bed for someone, and after many phone calls, was able to find a family member.
So it's easier, unfortunately, for the victim to say, you know what, I'm just going to stay, maybe this won't happen again. And that's what makes me, that's what, it saddens me that they have no choices. Victims have no choices here. The protective order is the only option for them. And like most of the victims say, it's just a piece of paper. When it's not. I mean, it's more than that. You know, the courts set down rules, the state of Arkansas sets down rules, and they are to be abided by. In my opinion, they need to be taken more seriously, but I'm not an attorney. I just see the results of.
Rocky Whiteley with Wildflowers Chapel recognizes the necessity and sees that victims have nowhere to go. So that's why he's leading the attempt to raise $440,000 to secure the property to house these victims.
Located the property. We've got the property. It's got two beautiful, nice solid homes on it. One's 3,800 square feet. The other is 1,200 square feet, and they're in a remote area. They're hard to get to, and they're close enough where we can work that area. And our board of directors, which our small group and our small board of directors has taken on the job of, we'll oversee it once we raise the money.
He sees that it is more than just a roof and a bed, and already has counselors on board to volunteer their services. The owners of the property, Whiteley and his wife, have also committed to giving at least $50,000 after paying off the mortgage to pay for operating expenses for that first year.
And we just hope to get them where they can be in a loving environment where that people really care and that we can take care of them in that regard and then help them get back on their feet so they become good, back as members of society and realize that, I mean, it's not easy. There's a lot of things that have to be done.
Though just $20,000 has been raised thus far, Whiteley has faith in the board of directors and in God that the funds will come. To make a donation, call 479-253-5108 or mail a check to Wildflowers Ministries Abused Shelter Fund at 6789 Highway 62 West, Eureka Springs, Arkansas, 72632. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
The Arkansas Scholarship Lottery is now more than 4 years old. Voters approved the creation of a lottery in 2008. Tickets began being sold the next year. The lottery has generated more than 130,000 college scholarships worth more than $382 million for Arkansas students. Along the way, there have been some troubles. Critics complained about the high salaries of the original staff. And earlier this month, a former lottery security official was sentenced to 3 years in jail for stealing tickets, then cashing them in. Bishop Woosley, the director of the lottery, has been in that position for less than 2 years. And in that time, he's worked on improving the public perception of the lottery and trying to get people to buy more tickets. Last week, he was in Northwest Arkansas and came to the Carver Center for Public Radio. He says one of the goals to raise more scholarship money is to expand the customer base for the lottery.
What we'd like to do is have more people buy tickets instead of have fewer people buy more tickets. And that's why we have a library of games like we have to try and cover the gamut of what people like. Most of the people like our scratch tickets. That's around 80% of our business still. But we keep trying to introduce tickets that will kind of cover a different dynamic of people that may like a different play style or want an immediate notification if they won, or can be patient and wait for a draw, kind of like our new raffle game.
Now, what is the raffle game?
It started selling in September. It's a $1 million raffle. There'll be a $1 million prize. It's drawn on January the 2nd. We have interval drawings of early bird drawings, what we call them. We've had two so far. We have another one on December 3rd. That's a $10,000 prize and 10 $1,000 prizes. And so what we've tried to do is drive sales of the game over the course of the game, because what we saw with our last raffle is a lot of people waited to the last second. And we're trying to incentivize people to buy tickets a little bit earlier, and you're eligible for more prizes, and you have a chance at winning more prizes the earlier you buy your ticket. So we've got one drawing in about a week, December 3rd. You have to buy your ticket by the last day of November. And then that ticket will also be eligible for the final drawing, which will be January 2nd.
You mentioned you want more people to buy more tickets rather than a smaller number buy more, or more people to buy tickets flat out. Then how do you get someone who hasn't in the 4 years purchased a ticket? How do you get them to become a consumer?
Well, the traditional method of doing that, when you really see a non-player buy a ticket, is when you have a Mega Millions or a Powerball jackpot that gets very large. One of the problems with the success of those two games is they've been changed and the jackpots have gotten larger, but people now are used to larger jackpots, and so that excitement level doesn't start where it used to, which it used to start at 100 million. We went to a retailer establishment yesterday, and he said people don't get excited till 300 million now, which I want them to get excited at 100 million. But anyway, when you get those large jackpots, you have people who've never bought a lottery ticket before who will go out and buy one. And what we hope is that experience, they'll like what they do. They'll win a prize or they'll get excited about it, and they'll become a regular player or semi-regular player.
Yeah, there is that thin line, because you do want more people to play, so you have to advertise them. But there are people who are hesitant about, or who voted against the lottery, mm-hmm. who didn't want poorer people buying more tickets.
Right.
So you've got to be thinking about that in advertising?
Or? Right. We have certain we don't target in our advertising. We have some fairly we don't have visions of grandeur, cash falling from the sky and things like that. We try to be real responsible in our advertising. Our advertising budget is not huge. I think it's a little bit less than what you would normally find in other lotteries. And we try and we don't target. You try and have a real general campaign that notifies people of what products you have out there, but doesn't have those promises of getting rich and things of that nature. We also spend a pretty good amount of our advertising money each year on a beneficiary campaign, which shows the students. We focus on students, have students from different universities do little interviews and commercials and things like that, which people know where the money's going and where the benefit's going. So that's what we try and concentrate on.
Do you have any idea if you are reaching more people buying tickets than rather a normal audience or the current audience buying more? Can you follow the demographics?
We did a demographic study about 2 years ago, and I think we're getting ready to do another one, which will probably be a little bit more complete since we're 4 years in. What the demographic study showed in 2010, I believe, is when we did it, was that our core players are in that $30,000 to $75,000 income range. And I think it surprised some people that, have that concept that people purchase the tickets that are lower income. And I think that kind of, in a way, pushed back on that and said that's a perception that's not true. But we'll have another one here soon, and that may give us a little bit more information about who buys tickets and who plays.
You're a competitive business. Do you have to keep eyes on what lotteries in border states are doing?
Absolutely. One of the things that we're looking at and have been dealing with here in the last year or so is that the federal law, there's a new interpretation of a federal law, the Wire Act, which says that it is now legal to sell lottery tickets on the internet within your own state. A few states have started doing that. We are a limited business model. We pretty much sell scratch tickets and the online tickets like a Powerball. And online is a term of art. They're terminal generated. We don't sell them on the internet. But that's all we can do by law right now. And so we can't do things that other lotteries are doing. We can't sell other games that other lotteries are doing. And when those lotteries are on our border is when it becomes an issue, because players are leaving the state to go over and buy the games in the other state. So the industry's changing just like any other gaming industry. We do our best to keep up, but we have limitations on what we can do. And so what we try to do is get ourselves in the best situation to be ready if we ever can do those things and offer games and a catalog of games that will compete with what they're doing.
Bishop Woosley is the director of the Arkansas Scholarship Lottery. He was in Northwest Arkansas last week.
That's jazz pianist Aaron Deal. Hi, I'm Robert Ginsberg. This Friday on Shades of Jazz at 10 p.m., I'll feature an interview with Aaron Deal in anticipation of his upcoming performance with his jazz quartet at the Walton Arts Center. We'll talk about his time on the road with Wynton Marsalis and much more. That's Shades of Jazz this Friday at 10 p.m.
This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this year, we talked to Brendan O'Connell, an artist who has become known for painting images he sees inside Walmart stores. He's also an organizer of a national event to encourage hundreds of thousands of school-aged children to create art. Every Artist Live officially launched last week with an ambitious goal of having more than 300,000 children create art on a single day. Schools in several states, including Arkansas, Texas, Georgia, and New York, signed on for the first year. And in Northwest Arkansas alone, more than 40,000 young artists accepted the challenge of creating an artistic interpretation of gratitude.
Yes, hold on. Yes, ma'am.
How many sixth graders? 364?
About 350, 360, yep.
360?
Yep.
Thursday afternoon, every sixth grade class at McNair Middle School in Fayetteville marched into the school gym, and each student placed a small square of art on the floor.
All right, you guys, line them up right here, starting right there. See how there's a little bit of a space around them? Line it up with the one above it.
The Every Artist concept began with an experiment last year when Brendan O'Connell, Walmart, the Walmart Museum, Downtown Bentonville Incorporated, and the Bentonville School District teamed up. More than 8,500 elementary school students in Bentonville made art on that day. Alan Drano, the director of the Walmart Museum in Bentonville, says last week's first ever Every Artist Live event was like that Bentonville experiment a year ago, just larger.
It's similar to what we did last year with the Bentonville School District, where all of the kids came into the indoor football field and laid it down on the floor, and it was just amazing when you see it coming together. That's why I think somebody's doing a little time-lapse photography. You just see it building and building, and just the differences between the pieces. You'll pick one up, and it'll say one thing. You'll pick another one up, it says something completely different, and it's just a wonderful thing to see.
By the time last Thursday that McNair Middle School started its parade of art, Alan had already been to other schools in the area to see their artwork. Each student participating was given the one-word theme of gratitude to use as inspiration.
One kid had just a rainbow of colors, and we said, well, what was that about? He said, well, because the world has color in it, and without color, the world would not be as loving. And I said, wow, that's great. We had a lot of kids that had pictures of the world because they're grateful for the world. Another student had picture and said food, and I said, what's that about? And she said, well, because without food we don't live. We can't live.
The McNair Assembly attracted photographers from local newspapers and interested observers from the school district. Rebecca Payton helped coordinate the school's participation. She teaches a sixth grade economics class called 21st Century Skills. And when she looked at the more than 300 images created by her students, She was impressed by the variety of subjects.
Well, they seem to be very grateful for their friends. They seem to be very grateful for their families, for the earth. They're grateful for freedom, and the American flag seems to be represented a great deal. They also have a lot of symbols of gaming, like football and basketball and baseball, Subway, the Razorbacks. So it's a large variety of things that they're grateful for.
Every sixth grader at the school contributed to the colorful collage that was assembled on the gym floor. Odds are that out of 300-plus students, some might be reluctant to participate because they felt their art might not be good enough.
Yes, and for the ones who felt like they didn't do very well at art, they asked if they could do words and decorate the words. But, you know, words are art, and calligraphy is an ancient art form. So we sort of talked about how you can make letters and words and handwriting into art, so they had an alternative avenue of expression.
After photographs were taken at each school of that school's collection of art, each image was gathered and scanned. Alan Drano with the Walmart Museum, one of the sponsors of the Every Artist Live event, says all of the local pieces will be on display next month at some pretty prominent locations throughout Northwest Arkansas.
And the artwork will then, during the month of December, be installed throughout Northwest Arkansas at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, at the Walton Arts Center along the Razorback Greenway, at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale, at the Walmart Museum on the Square in Bentonville. And it'll all culminate in a celebration on January 11th at the Jones Center for Families, where we'll have all of the art in one place. The other locations will have different mixes of the art, but it'll each place will make a different sort of statement.
He says which piece will go where will be decided by a random process. But whether a visitor is at Crystal Bridges or along the trail system called the Razorback Greenway, they'll see images of gratitude, and some of them with subjects that are a bit unexpected. Among the art at McNair Middle School were pieces dedicated to the concept of time and one dedicated to spoons. Again, Rebecca Payton, who teaches 21st century skills at McNair Middle School.
Well, in 21st century, we talk a lot about how a lot of people don't have the luxuries that we have. And so spoons are something that you don't see in the slums of Mumbai, and they've seen pictures. And so, you know, to be grateful for the extras that we have that make life easier. And then time is something that we talk about as being the most valuable of all resources and non-renewable. And they have a tremendous amount of free time that we hope that they value, and they enjoy the free time that they have with their parents, which is really scarce.
Place it slowly, it'll slide. We got a lot of wax on this floor.
You'll be able to see all the artwork from Northwest Arkansas throughout the region and at the Jones Center in Springdale on January 11th. And you can learn more about the project at everyartist.me.
With the colder weather, you're probably much more inclined to stay indoors than head outdoors for your entertainment. Thankfully, there is plenty of live theater happening in heated venues across the listening area during the month of December. One of those productions includes Fully Committed, which can be seen at Rogers Little Theater December 6th through the 8th and 12th through the 15th. This humorous play follows a day in the life of an out-of-work actor who mans the red-hot reservation line at Manhattan's number one restaurant. A cast of desperate callers will stop at nothing in their zeal to land a prime reservation or the right table. Amid the barrage, Sam's got his own needs to contend with. His recently widowed dad wants him home for Christmas, and he's up for a choice part at Lincoln Center. Fully Committed was listed in Time Magazine's Top 10 Plays of 2000 and has 40 wildly diverse characters played by a single performer. Showtime is at 8 p.m. with dinner served at 7. During Sunday afternoon matinees, showtime is at 2 o'clock and food is served at 1.
The Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale is continuing its long-standing December tradition with the return of the best Christmas pageant ever. Dozens of local children will be participating in that show. Performances are scheduled December 13th, 14th, and 15th.
More young actors will take the stage this holiday season in Trike Theater's production of Junie B. and Jingle Bell's Batman Smells. Junie B. Jones is a first grader and main character in a series of children's books. Performances will be December 6th through the 8th and the 12th through the 15th at Northwest Arkansas Community College's White Auditorium in Bentonville. Admission is $10 for children and seniors and $15 for adults.
It is the holiday season, so you'll have plenty of opportunities to catch the holiday classic at Christmas Christmas Carol on stage next month. Theater Squared has scheduled performances from December 5th through the 29th in the Studio Theater of Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studios. Earthen Vessels Drama Company will also perform A Christmas Carol at the King Opera House in Van Buren. Performances for that production are scheduled for December 6th through the 8th. New Threshold Theater is trying out a new idea this season, touring a youth show around Arkansas that is completely actor-devised and oriented and holiday-themed. The NTT Holiday Experiment is scheduled for December 7th through the 22nd. Performances are free and appropriate for all ages. According to the organization's website, a small team of actors will be assembled alongside a director and stage manager. Starting 2 weeks before their first show opens, the team will be given a list of shows and stories they will include in short comedy sketches. To request a performance, you can fill out a form at newthreshold.com. A touring schedule will be released in December. The Sound of Music will be on stage at the Lyric Theater in Harrison, December 13th through the 15th. That same weekend, University of the Ozarks will be performing A Tune of Christmas. Shows are slated for December 12th through the 14th in the Black Box Theater of the Walton Fine Arts Center. That's in Clarksville now. General admission, $8. Students, faculty, and staff may receive one free ticket at the door while tickets last with their University of the Ozarks ID card.
And finally, the circus is coming to the Alma Performing Arts Center in December.
Ready, here we go. Singing. 5, 6, 7, 8, and 1, 2, and 3.
For a couple of months now, students from the Alma School District have been rehearsing for Carnival, which will be on stage at the Alma Performing Arts Center in early December. With more than 70 actors, about a 30-member orchestra, and roughly a dozen students backstage, more than 100 students are working on this single play. The job of wrangling all of these kids falls to a handful of staff members, including director Terry McGonigal.
We're trying something new this year. We combined three classes together to do it, rehearse during the school day, because we've had so many kids that said, well, I can't do this, the musical, because I'm in football and after school, or I work, or I have church, or I have a job, or you know, I have to go home and take care of my little brother and sister, or that kind of thing. So this year we decided that we're going to try to get more kids involved, and we did that by combining a musical theater dance class, an advanced theater production class, and the chamber choir. So it's been a test, you know, to make it work creatively as well as make it work logistically, you know, because we just have so many kids.
The students have been rehearsing since September during a class period in the middle of the day that's less than an hour long. Carnival is based on the 1953 movie Lily. The play tells the story of a young girl who goes to live with a family after her father dies. But when she arrives, the family has moved on, so she joins the carnival. At first, she is unsuccessful with several jobs with the troupe that travels across France. Eventually, her ability to communicate with a talking puppet becomes one of the carnival's star attractions. While the production has a happy ending, McGonigal says it's a little dark in some places. He says the fact that it's not your typical cheery musical is one of the things that attracted him to the show.
I've been teaching for 38 years, and it's a show I've always wanted to do and never did. And because we were going to have a big cast, I knew we were going to have a big group this year, and it takes lots of extras with all the circus people, and the show is written with four puppets that perform, and the puppeteer works with the, you know, controls the puppets. Well, I thought, why not have live actors be puppets? And so I created four more roles that way for other kids in the show. So anyway, that's why we chose it. And once we decided that this is a show we wanted to do, then the ideas just started bouncing off of each other. My technical director, Stephen Sellers, you know, I said, steampunk, you know what that is? And he said, nope. And so he pulled it up on his cell phone. He went, this is so cool looking. And the ideas just started flowing. And we've had really a lot of fun working with it and putting it together because of that.
Steampunk is a genre of science fiction that typically features steam-powered machinery rather than advanced technology. The fashion of this genre often involves a unique take on Victorian-era clothing. Several of the actors' costumes include corsets and goggles, and cogs like you would find in the inner workings of a clock have been incorporated into the set design. Students, as well as parents, grandparents, and director Terry McGonigal, have been helping make the costumes since July. Another interesting aspect to this show is it will require some students to perform acrobatics from a trapeze, hoop, or aerial silk that's hanging above the stage. To help with this part of the performance, McGonigal received assistance from Starfish Circus. Members of the organization, which is based in Kalamazoo, Michigan, led a week-long workshop for students during mid-September. In addition to their regular class time, Starfish Circus instructors worked with ALMA students for an additional 2 hours after school and for about 6 hours on a Saturday. McGonigal says Starfish Circus was good about teaching safety from the first day, and students have been great about spotting each other and working together.
I have a mom that's a teacher here, and her daughter is one of the trapeze kids, and the first question she was, how high off the floor is she going to be? And I said, oh, no more than 30 or 40 feet. And she said, is there a net under her? And I said, oh, no, you know. And in reality, I mean, the highest anybody goes is about 20 feet. And that's the boys in the silks, and they have them wrapped around them. So if they do slip, it catches them automatically, you know. So, but it's just funny to kind of tease people about it. And I really have had no parents even question it. So it's been very nice. I guess they trust me.
As they near the end of this experiment and closer to opening night, director Terry McGonigal says working with such a large group has had its ups and downs.
One of the things I'm very strict about is grades. And I believe that the academics have to come first since we're an educational institution. And just last week, I took some kids out of the show because their grades weren't where I think they need to be. And unfortunately, it's made some shifts and stuff have to happen in casting and who's doing what and costuming and all those things have to make some changes. But it's been good for the most part. We're finding that the 45 minutes a day really is not enough, so we've had to go to some morning before school rehearsals. We have some Sunday afternoon rehearsals. We're doing some dance rehearsals late in the evening after athletics are over. So, you know, we work around a lot of different things in order to make it happen. And the kids are relatively flexible, and we can, you know, get it all done if we just keep plugging away.
Because this production involves a variety of skills, it has required quite a bit of hard work from these young performers.
I have always, in all my years of teaching, have challenged my students to be as professional and polished as possible. You know, I've never accepted mediocre as a standard. And we see a lot of bad theater, but we see a lot of good theater too. And I take them to the International Thespian Festival every summer in Nebraska, where they see really good quality theater. And then they come back and say, we need to be that good, you know? And so they all kind of challenge themselves as well. But yeah, we set a pretty high standard for them. And, you know, as you can tell from the singing and that kind of thing, they rise to the challenge.
Performances of Carnival are scheduled for 7 p.m. December 5th and 7th, and at 2 p.m. December 8th at the ALMA Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $15 for adults and $10 for students. Student tickets must be purchased from the box office. More information is available at almapac.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
70 bees, a million fields in all our folks only, Imperial Surge of Paris.
This is Ozarks at Large. The days just before and just after Thanksgiving are very busy. There are performances, special shopping events, and holiday-related parades, shows, and observances. Tonight, the Ozark Poets and Writers Collective will welcome one half of the band Still on the Hill to their monthly gathering at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The program begins at 7 with an open mic, then Donna Sterna will follow. It's free, but donations are accepted. For more information, OzarkWritersWordPress.com.
Almost every day in the week immediately following Thanksgiving is given a label. Black Friday is followed by Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and the charitable-themed Giving Tuesday. Add another to the list, Green Friday at Hobbs State Park in Benton County. The concept has nothing to do with shopping. Instead, the idea is to get outside with family and friends. Among the activities scheduled at Hobbs on the day after Thanksgiving, scavenger hunts all day. At 10:30, Mother Nature will read a story, sing some songs, and help children make crafts. Guided hikes begin at 11 a.m. and 12:30 p.m., and there's an Eagle Cruise at 3 o'clock. The Eagle Cruise does require advance reservation. For more information about Green Friday at Hobbs State Park, you can call 789-5000.
Monday, The Rogers Bentonville Elks Lodge will host the 8th annual Chili Feed to benefit Open Avenues. Open Avenues is a local organization that helps adults with disabilities find gainful employment through partner companies. The chili is available at the lodge at 501 South 40th Street in Rogers, Monday. Also, by the way, the date for the annual Rogers Christmas Parade. The chili dinner begins at 11 a.m. Monday morning and will last until 8 p.m. And the Christmas Parade begins at 7 and will cover parts of Poplar, First, and Walnut Streets downtown.
Speaking of Poplar Street in Rogers, the open house for the new home for Kendrick Fincher Hydration for Life is Tuesday afternoon with an official ribbon cutting at 4:30. The nonprofit is now located at 1113 West Poplar, and the open house is Tuesday, December 3rd from 3 until 6. You can learn more at kendrickfincher.org.
The Holiday Express at Creekmore Park in Fort Smith will get rolling Monday evening, December 2nd. The city's Parks and Recreation Department will host the event that includes the ceremonial turning on of the Christmas lights at 5:15. If lights aren't enough for you, how about free cocoa, free popcorn, a free screening of the movie The Polar Express, fireworks, and for one night only, a steam engine train that will take patrons around the park. Other nights after Monday, there will be a diesel engine train available to give rides. For more information, 785-4225.
One of the longest-running Christmas traditions in Eureka Springs is the Silver Tea, hosted by the women of St. James's Episcopal Church in Eureka Springs. The tea is scheduled for Thursday, December 5th from 1:30 until 3:30 p.m. Every year, the tea raises money for a specific nonprofit agency. This year's edition is the 47th annual, and it will benefit Clear Spring School. The school is about to celebrate its 40th year of operation, and proceeds from the tea will help with the purchase of playground equipment. Admission to the tea at the Crescent Hotel is by donation, and the event is open to the public. John Wiley will be there to provide music. For more information, you can call St. James Episcopal Church at 253-8610.
Next week, the Bentonville Public Library will have an opportunity for you to pick up an inexpensive gift and help the library's collection of books for children and teens grow. Friends of the Bentonville Public Library are hosting a book fair from Monday, December 2nd through Saturday the 7th. The Scholastic Book Fair includes books, cookbooks, and more. The hours most days are 10 until 4 inside the Bentonville Library.
Friday night, December 6th, Ozark Folkways in Winslow will offer up food, drink, and music, and they say the chance to get Christmas shopping done early. The name of the event is, in fact, Get It Done Early. There will be items for sale made by local artists and craftspeople. The December 6th event is open from 6 until 8 p.m.
And one thing Thanksgiving week doesn't have much of around here, college athletics. Almost all of the area teams are either away from home for games or off until after Thanksgiving. There are two basketball games on the University of Ozark campus in Clarksville tonight. Both the men's and women's basketball teams host Hendricks tonight. The women's game tips off at 5:30. The men follow at 7:30. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
A week from tomorrow night, we are inviting you to come celebrate Christmas with us.
Yes. Ozarks at Large is hosting a Christmas-themed show at 6:30 next Wednesday. That's December 4th at the Fayetteville Public Library.
We're going to have music from Adams Collins Trio, from Farmers and the Markets, and from Jones and Leah. And we're also going to have some other special guests. It will be at the library. I hear there will be free cocoa, tea, and coffee.
That's what I hear.
We're also going to have some giveaways, and it will all be recorded. And then if you can't make it to the library, which we certainly hope you can on December 4th, we'll have it on the air as Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on December 24th, Christmas Eve.
On Christmas Eve, absolutely. And for those of you that do come, it is free and open to the public. But if you would like to bring a non-perishable food item, we would appreciate that. Our Giving Tree charity of choice here at KUAF this year is the Fayetteville Public Schools Outback Program. And so we will be, any donations we get from there, we will give to them. So I think it'll be a good time, and we hope to see you there. That's the sound of Little Chief inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this year. During their visit, the college musicians discussed their EP, Somewhere Near the River. An anonymous donor helped finance a local contest that allowed about a dozen bands, including Little Chief, to record an EP for free. The Fayetteville-based band is currently working on a full-length album, and last week, the group launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise $10,000 for the project. In May, cellist Matthew Heckman says the band went on a short regional tour and performed in places like Dallas and Waco, Texas, Shreveport, Louisiana, and Columbia, Missouri. He says it was a good experience, and it really changed his perspective on his future as a musician.
The tour was kind of an awakening for me that before the tour, I thought, you know, oh, if Little Chief is big enough to make money to support myself after I graduate, then I'll do that. But if not, then, you know, we'll part ways. It'll just be, you know, this fun thing that we did. And it's kind of always been my dream to play music, but I've always kind of written that off as, you know, nobody, very, very few people make money doing that. And over the course of the tour and over the course of this last year playing shows and playing music, I think all of us have realized that this is what we love, like this is our passion, and you know that if we have a shot at playing music with, you know, each other, our, you know, three best friends for the rest of our lives, then like we're gonna take that.
The album has been named Lion's Den, which Heckman says is symbolic of this whole process. He says it's scary because he doesn't know what the band's future will be, but they're hopeful. The record will feature 10 songs, which are almost completely done. Heckman says vocalist and guitarist Matt Cooper does most of the band's writing. Cooper is also how they decided to work with a producer in Nashville. Heckman says Cooper is friends with Joe Kane, who earned a Grammy nomination as a guitarist for the Rhett Walker Band. The group's debut single, When Mercy Found Me, was released in 2012 and earned a Grammy nomination for Best Contemporary Christian Music Song. During the University of Arkansas's fall break, Heckman says Little Chief traveled to Nashville to record a single with Kane. The result was Mountain Song, which is used in the video on the band's Kickstarter page and will also be featured on the new album. Heckman says they plan to record the album in January and release it in March. When Little Chief heads back to the studio, the lineup will include Heckman and Cooper, as well as drummer Andrew Myers and bassist John Lewis Anderson. Missing from an earlier configuration of the band is vocalist Ellie Turner.
There's a lot of time that we all put into the band. You know, we're playing shows almost every weekend this semester, and Ellie just felt like she couldn't commit that amount of time to it, just to be fair to us and to be fair to herself. And so she decided to part ways with us, which, I mean, it wasn't some sort of like huge, like, oh, we hate you, you know, like Yoko type situation, but, you know, we're very grateful for everything that she's brought to the band, and very sad to see her go. But, you know, we wish her the best.
Though she won't be touring with the band anymore, cellist Matthew Heckman says Turner's vocals will be heard on the album. When they decided to record a new record, Heckman says they were quoted a price of $1,000 per song, and that only included the recording of a single track. He says they were eventually able to work out a deal where that price would also include the mixing and mastering of their songs. Once they had a goal of how much money they needed to record a new album, the musicians decided to turn to their fans for help financing the project.
We kind of affectionately refer to our fan base as the tribe, which is kind of a reflection of how we feel about our fans and how we hope our fans like feel about us, that we're all kind of a family, like we're in this together. And I think the Kickstarter is kind of a reflection of that you know, that our fans have been with us since the beginning and just have been incredibly supportive. Like we sold out George's, the garden stage of George's, the back room that holds 700 people a couple of weeks ago. And that was just amazing to see. And so, you know, we really appreciate our fans, and we know that that they support us, and we know that together we can make this happen.
Little Chief has until December 20th to raise $10,000. As of now, the group has raised about $3,000 through the Kickstarter fundraiser. As with all projects on the crowdfunding site, contributors get rewards based on varying donation levels. Perks include everything from copies of the album and handmade wood art created by the group's bassist to two tickets to every future concert the band performs. More information on the fundraiser is available by searching for Little Chief on Kickstarter.com. For more about the band, visit LittleChiefBand.com.
This week in This American Life, turkeys.
It's pecking the car. It's pissed.
Scary, scary turkeys.
It is attacking the car.
Feral turkeys.
911, the sheriff's department.
The local police are up here shooting our turkeys, and they've got my husband tied up. They have him handcuffed because he was trying to get him to stop shooting our turkeys.
Humans and birds collide this week.
Listen Sunday at 10 a.m. to KUAF.
The Symphony of Northwest Arkansas presents the annual Christmas concert Saturday, December 14th at Walton Arts Center. Performing a mix of holiday favorites, musicians will be joined by the Sona Singers, regional choirs, the winners of Sona's talent search, and more. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Midland.
Midland.
Yep.
Midland is south of Fort Smith?
It is in Sebastian County.
Okay. Yes. You and I went to the same thing this weekend, but never saw each other.
No.
Because there were a lot of people.
A lot of people went to the lighting on the square
in Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm. I told Beck earlier, you know, that I'd plan on going, and I made it. I didn't quite make it for the official light turning on. I heard them counting down as I was walking. Like, I was like a block away, so I couldn't quite see the lights. We left early, but I did not understand how many people were going to be trying to find a parking spot. I didn't plan that well.
Well, I'll tell you that I planned to park here.
But they had the truck.
Right. And we got the last parking space.
Oh, did you?
So, I mean, because other people had pulled in, which is not advisable. But anyway.
But no, I mean, I didn't even try to park at the station because we're across from the library. And I knew they were going to be staging over here somewhere.
Right.
I ended up over here as a last ditch effort. And that did not work out well. I ended up actually at a friend's apartment complex. Thank you, Brandon. And again, made it. But just missed the lights going on.
Did you watch the whole parade?
I did.
Okay, at the end, mm-hmm. were these custom trucks that
were
blinding?
So bright.
I think that was 3B Radio that sponsored that. It seemed like they had
Yeah, but I didn't catch the name of – I think it was a they did, but I think I didn't catch the custom car name. I couldn't quite read it.
The lights were super bright.
Yeah.
And then they had that horn that sounds like a big freighter.
Like a semi, yeah.
Right. And so anyway, that was – here's what I loved about the parade. And we're talking about Fayetteville. We were both there. Bentonville was doing something that night. And
very similar,
next year I'll go to Bentonville.
Well, right.
But what I loved about the Fayetteville parade is it's kind of homemade. I mean, there were these floats, and it was just – it's this democratic, you want to be in the parade?
Uh-huh.
Come on, be in the parade.
Uh-huh.
Arts Live was marching. It was just a lot of fun.
I was surprised – that they had announcers. I didn't realize that they had...
I think it was John Williams, was it not?
I couldn't see. There were so many people.
Yeah, I was too far away.
And I couldn't quite hear. I mean, I heard, but not enough to distinguish who it was. But yeah, I was very surprised that they had, like, you know, the Macy's Day Parade announcers type thing. So that was interesting. But yeah.
It was a good time, but it was cold.
So cold.
I was on Block, watching a Block, and that's a wind tunnel.
Yeah, we went to Block thinking it would be less crowded, and it was, but it was still very chilly. I could not feel my toes for an hour.
Ditto. I could not feel mine either. But there's still more. Rogers has theirs Monday night.
Well, Saturday. Lighting the Christmas tree at 5, and they'll have their parade at 7, I believe 7, on Monday.
And Fort Smith at Creekmore Park, that begins 5:15 Monday night, as we mentioned earlier in the program. So still plenty of opportunities to catch holiday fever.
Mm-hmm.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Antoinette will be with Christina tomorrow for another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large at noon.
Have a happy Tuesday.